Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
You're listening to the Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
This is Paul Hawksby.
And Andy Jacobs.
And this is the H&J Daily with some of the best bits of this afternoon's show. We were joined in the studio by Pat Nevin, former Chelsea, Everton, Tranmere, Motherwell, Clyde winger, Scotland winger, of course, who's done a kind of second, part two of his memoirs, Football Now to Survive It, which was very interesting. Some deeply personal stuff he's shared in the book as chatted about. So it was on good form as always. We had some clips of the week, Pewter.
Very good, yes.
Yeah, we
2005,
some good ones in there. And we had a bit of a chat, of course.
We did.
You got involved as always. That should do you. Here it is. Good afternoon, everyone. Good afternoon, Andy. I've just saying our times have changed. There's Steve Smith in Steve Forbes' bulletin there saying, no Jack Leach. Oh, yeah, it's very disappointing.
Oh, yeah, you Jenny Reckon, mate.
Steve Waugh would have said, oh, how'd you feel about that? He would have said, I'm delighted. You know, he's their best spinner.
Yeah, look, it's great for us.
Things have changed, haven't they, really?
Honestly, I was looking forward to the Ashes, but, I mean, by the time we get there, I don't think we'll have any play. I think I'll be opening the bowling. I mean, really.
Ben Stokes' knee the other day as well.
Oh, it didn't look good, did it? But still, it's going to be good. The batting's in good shape, but you can worry about the bowling a little bit. The cup final, that was quite
enjoyable.
Did
you enjoy it?
I did enjoy it, yeah. It was quite good, actually.
Did you get up for Big Daddy versus Giant Haystacks at 8:30 in the morning?
No, I didn't, actually.
I mean, I think the coverage started about 1:30, wasn't it? Which was really when the coverage was coming to an end back in the day, wasn't
true.
It? Really,
it's different now.
When it was 8:30, 9 o'clock.
It's strange being on both channels is always a bit tricky. But, there you go. And I don't know why Brooklyn Beckham was wearing a dinner suit. Was he going on somewhere?
Maybe he probably was. That does happen now and again, doesn't it? Well, I went somewhere and someone turned up in the full Harry Gibbs.
Yeah.
In the old Dickie.
We were talking about it last week, Mendieta.
No, that one. But then there was a show years and years ago that the great Jimmy Greaves did when he was a light entertainment act, not just a kind of brilliant footballing legend, called Greaves' Gaff. And they had various guests on it. And one week, the guests were... And basically, the conceit was, it was Jimmy Greaves' house. Yeah. Oh, who's that at the door? And he ding-dong.
There was somebody on film, normally. He wasn't even there.
But he went and asked, oh, it's me old mate Linda Lusardi. Then come and have a cup of tea.
My old Frank Bruno
he introduced once, which was never quite worked out. And so there's Linda Lusardi, like dressed as you would be for a sort of daytime TV show.
Yeah.
Suddenly, oh, there's another knock at the door. I wonder who that could be.
I remember that.
Opens the door and it's Fred Truman, demon bowler Fred Truman, in full Harry Gibbs, in full Dickie Bow dinner suit.
And, I don't know why.
And he says, oh, really? Come in, Fred. You look very smart. And he said, yeah, I'm going on to a function after this. But you'd think you'd have a change of clothes. You know, they would have said, but almost certainly someone said, Fred, would you mind bringing a change of clothes? Because it's a kind of daytime show and it's a bit more, I will not bring a change of clothes. I have one. And he probably, anyway, that doesn't really take us anywhere. But the reason... they brought, if you want to relive the way the FA Cup final day used to be on ITV, over on ITV4, and I think it's available to download, on Saturday they did the best of Saint and Greaves FA Cup final days, their
fun,
shows. So I've not watched
it
yet.
A bit of heavy editing required.
Yeah, imagine it. Yeah, a bit of editing. But I think it's about an hour and 10 minutes. But if you want to go and relive the FA Cup final from their eyes in the 80s, then that is available. But the game itself, I enjoyed the game, as Kenny Dalglish used to say.
Yeah, the handball thing, though. Let's hope this is the one that really does lead to IFAB looking at these rules, because I just often wonder. I mean, David Ellery is supposed to be the person that devised all this, and I just wonder if he sits at home thinking, what a great decision. That was such a clear handball. That really affected the way that the ball was going. You think, just brushed his fingers. It's ridiculous.
It's just the whole thing is counterintuitive.
I mean, it's pathetic.
It feels like one of those rules made up by people who don't like football.
It's awful.
And you sometimes see that with the IFAB rules. Mm. Law 12. I've got it the wrong way around. Law 12. We've got to do something about law. We're going to march on David Ellery's office with lit torches and sort out Law 12.
But the original handball rule in football was never intended to give you penalties for that.
No, absolutely
you
not.
You know, it's got a... that's just not good enough, I don't think, anyway.
But the actual game itself, I say 2-1, you never knew. You never quite knew, did you? Because they came on strong as soon as Garnacho came on, they look pretty lively, Manchester United, and they nearly scored. They nearly brought back the 2-2 at the end.
Quite excited,
It kept you on the edge of your seat. So I've seen far worse FA Cup finals than that.
It will be a bit tedious if City do the treble. Really, honestly.
Well, you're not getting. I'm getting behind them. You're not.
I'd only get behind it if it meant that Pep was leaving. But as it won't, you just thought,
they are
brilliant and everything, but, you know, it's a bit... It's like any sport. It's like Verstappen. It's like anything when there's only one team that can win anything.
Unless it's Chelsea, you wouldn't be too bothered about that.
Even
really?
I'll remind you of that.
If Todd Bowley sorts it out next year and you're winning.
That's not
going to
happen.
Pochettino's going for the treble. He's saying, well, I find it quite a healthy situation that one team dominates.
The chance of Pochettino going for the treble is more like the chance of me playing for England, honestly.
Okay, in the over-80s team, we get one over here.
No chance. I mean, I get frustrated with the chance. It'd be interesting to see. Pat won't be able to say a lot, I think, because he works for the club. But there's somebody in that club who is leaking like mad to the press. Every time Chelsea go for a player, everybody knows about it. And it makes them look so stupid, like this one this morning, Ugarte. He's gone to PSG. You know, don't say anything till you've got him. Just don't.
Well,
you know, and if anybody asks, just say, no, we're not. We're looking at lots of options. You know, just don't. It just makes you look so stupid.
Well, what about having your complete managerial recruitment played out in public? I'm just still waiting. This afternoon, about 3 o'clock, almost certainly, we're going to get something saying Fabrizio Romano. I'm staying, says Ange Postecoglou. I have unfinished business at Celtic. It's feeling more and more...
Don't mention Fabrizio Romano, really, honestly. I can't stand any of these people, really. They're so irritating. They spend their whole day on Twitter regurgitating. I think they all copy each other, and it just becomes like...
I've been sitting with you for an hour and a half. You're in a foul mood today.
Am I?
God, you've been relentlessly miserable and negative since 11:30.
That's my normal...
Since 1976.
That's all right.
But honestly, so come on, let's have you a bit more bright and breezy, for goodness sake.
Upbeat.
This is supposed to be light entertainment.
It is light entertainment.
You're miserable. Anyway.
My friend said to me, I'm sounding like Sean Dyche.
Really?
Yeah, I went back and listened to it. He rang me up on Thursday and he said to me, I was listening to you today, you sound like Sean Dyche. And I went back and listened to it.
Well, it's your job, by the way.
Oh, I did.
You did?
So I bought some of these throat sweets.
Oh, okay. Fair
enough. That'll make me sound a bit less.
All right, then. Get you some happy pills as well.
Don't need
pop
happy
down the
pills.
Chemist.
I'm just healthily cynical.
All the time.
Well, it's like this. It's like Phil Schofield has admitted he hasn't watched a single episode since he left. Why would he?
Yeah. There's not been that many on, is there? Oh, by the way, how are you? That seems to be the question of the day. Good, I hope.
Yes,
so, a couple of things to get going on very, very quickly before we speak to our first guest. Both City related. One is, it would appear that Ilkay Gundogan and Kevin De Bruyne only got their FA Cup winners' medals this morning. They all went up the stairs to get them. Mm. And there's Prince William, and he said, I've run out, lads. They give them to the whole squad. I don't know who's the ball boys were picking them up. Or
did they all have to go back to Wembley, including Prince William, on a Monday morning?
Well, they should do, because it's not the same, is it? Not the same. Turning up in a jiffy bag. It's terrible. But sometimes not getting your rewards. We're interested if have you ever had that situation where you think, well, where was mine? Why did I miss out? Well, where did you miss out? The other thing, of course, is serenading Elton John with his own song. Your song, a lovely bit of footage, of course.
Yeah.
But it did strike me that now and again you see somebody. I mean, how many times it could be, I don't know, sort of stag do at an airport, and then Boy George is flying off to do some DJing, and then they all go, come, 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 come. And he might, what do you do? Wave? Yeah. I mean, what does the bloke, what does the artiste do when they're having their own songs sung at
them?
Oh,
no, you have to acknowledge it.
Yeah. Have you ever done that to anybody?
Well, I did do it, didn't I? I did it to Hugh Cornwall.
Oh, that's right, yeah. In the cricket dressing room, you sat next to him, you started going,
He did say to me, are you taking the Mickey? But he didn't say Mickey.
He didn't say Mickey. That's right. Well, you became friends. It kind of worked out. So
look at me. I've cheered up already.
Look at you. Honestly, he's quite upbeat. It's like, honestly, like Harry Enfield he's been since half 11.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
Thanks for emails and text. Speaking of Elton John, he was sat in the royal box when the Evertonians at the 1984 FA Cup final famously sang, I guess that's why they call us the Blues back then. Fantastic. It's a nice group one there from Steve in East Yorkshire. What else have we got for you? My old man was out for an Indian meal with a cricket team after a tour match, and David Essex happened to be in there. They all sang Hold Me Close to Him full song. He got up and walked out. I'm quite surprised at that. We've met him a few times before. Yeah. I thought he'd be joining in.
Yeah, yeah.
But I suppose every cloud's got a silver lining, isn't it, really?
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
Paul Hawksby, Andy Jacobs here on Talk Sport. Pat Nevin chatted to us about his first memoir, The Accidental Football, a couple of years back. Well, he is back with a new book, Football and How to Survive It. And he has joined us in the studio. Pat, good to see you.
Well, first of all, thanks for having me back again.
Great pleasure. We enjoyed the first one, and I very much enjoyed the second one as well. It's interesting because we kind of join you post Everton. You've gone to Tranmere. And we were just talking about this. I was working on Goal magazine with Adrian Thrills, an old mate of yours from the NME days. And we came up, myself and Thrills, to talk to you about writing some articles for us. Because you were kind of thinking for a life beyond football at that stage. And you wrote a really good piece with Stuart Pearce. You did a bunch of other features for us there, which were fascinating. But that, you know, your kind of career went in a different direction, maybe not the direction you expected.
Yeah, I did expect and kind of hope that I'd go into, you know, writing and certainly sports journalism, but other journalism too.
Mm.
But, you know, I was asked to do other things. I ended up doing TV, radio, that sort of thing as well. But also before that happened, what happens in this book happened, which one of the great things about it is that I couldn't have seen it coming, what was going to happen. I don't think anyone could have seen what was going to happen in the second part of my career, because it had never happened to anyone else before, ever.
No, we'll come on to that.
And
CEO and player. Player,
you've done
CEO.
Virtually every job in football.
Yeah, with the exception of manager, which I've been offered quite a few times, but I didn't fancy it. So, and that's another one of the reasons why I did want to write about it. To go back to your original point, you're spot on. Writing was that first love. Mm. You know, I mean, all the way back to 1920, I used to write for the Chelsea Football Club newspaper, and sometimes under an assumed name for magazines, etc. So I always had the love of writing anyway. So writing this myself was, these two books was something I really wanted to do. But I suppose the thing I've got, maybe others, you see, you've done every job that there is in football just about, and been on every committee, you name it, right? But I'm still not an insider inside. Mm. I'm still an outsider from football inside.
Yeah.
So it's like me or you walking in, like, and going, right, you lot are weird. What you think's normal, I think's absolutely mad. And it's from that position that I kind of was able to write these books.
I suppose when guys are in the dressing room, they look around the dressing room when you're playing, they say, well, he'll go on to be a manager, you know, he'll go on to do this, he'll go on to do this. He'll never be involved in football again. Once his playing days are over, we won't see him. He'll go and do something completely different. I would imagine a lot of your teammates would have said that about you, wouldn't they?
They'd have been shocked to see me. We did a thing the other night down at Stamford Bridge. This the 83-84 team got back together again. And of course, I was a wee quiet guy in the corner. Mm. And of course, by now, I'm the MC. I'm the one who's standing up there introducing everyone and trying to keep Ken Bates, etc. in order.
Wow.
So, yeah, you do. You change, you adapt, you move on in your life. And that is one of the joys of it. You can be a slightly different person as you not only got older, but you can adapt and change yourself as you move. Well, thank goodness I was able to do that, because all the different jobs I went on to do would all needed very, very different things.
Yeah.
Before we cover that, though, you said you wrote under an assumed name. What was your nom de plume?
Oh, no, a different one. So usually bands singers and bands from two different bands switched around.
Really?
Yeah, so
that's really good.
So you would do that, or else there was a kind of, when the magazines, they would sometimes have a name they use when they didn't use. Yeah. People used to do that. Do you know, football teams used to do that when they didn't want to show who they were playing? So they would call them A. Newman.
Oh, right.
A. Newman.
Oh,
and
okay. Everybody,
nobody knew who this was. Yeah. Or S. A. Junior. So that's what they used to do.
I remember seeing that for the first time. I think the Trialist brothers are getting a lot of games. Alan Trialist, Arthur Trialist.
Yeah.
The other thing, a period of adaptation you had to have going to Tranmere, is playing in the second tier. You know, you played sort of top level football and stuff, and you've been at Everton. So what was that like? I mean, you went into a side with John Aldridge, and you were one of the supply lines team. It was a pretty good Tranmere team, wasn't it?
Yeah. Well, how good it was. Well, apart from the fact it was to watch, it was brilliant. Mm. It was a brilliant team to watch. It's a great team to play in. But, you know, I can hear a listener here saying, oh, Tranmere, yawn. Yeah. In actual fact, the truth of it is we were in the playoffs to get to the Premier League every year, 3 years in a row, and we were some team. You know, we had all that you talk about there, but we also had six or seven other players who were then sold on to Premier League teams. It was a very good team. Mm. We didn't have a strength in depth because we didn't have the money. But going there, you know, it was difficult because, you know, stepping down a level, and I think I'm playing the best football of my career.
You know, played more for Scotland, didn't you, when you were in Tranmere than you did previously?
Exactly. Good knowledge. I'm impressed with that.
I didn't read it as extensively, but I did have a good look.
Yes.
But, and that's the thing. But, you know, going back to what the first book said, I absolutely held by it. I played football for the love of it, for the absolute joy of doing it. Now, if that happened to be at Tranmere, or that happened to be at Everton, or that happened to be at Galatasaray or PSG, all the clubs I could have played for, it didn't matter as long as I was loving it and enjoying it. And I was there. And as I say, Premier League clubs did try and buy me. And certainly Celtic came in a few times as well.
Yeah, the story about that is very good in the book. We'll keep our powder dry, but it's a beautiful story. It's you think you know that the club that are going to buy you, and it's... Yeah.
And I get that completely wrong.
Because that would have been a dream to have played
Celtic?
Celtic
was my team at the time, you know. So, you know, and they'd come in for me four times during my career. You know, and for a variety of reasons, it didn't happen. Never me deliberately turning them. Notice the word deliberately there. Never me deliberately turning them down. But, you know, if it's not for you, no, goodbye, kind of thing. And we've all got this. You should ask when players come and talk to you. We've all got this alternative career that you don't think of. Yeah. You think of all these guys, oh, yeah, you know, they played for X, Y, and Z. Oh, it must have always been like that. No. We all had this alternative career we could have went on. So mine would have been... It would have been Dundee United, followed by Paris Saint-Germain, followed by Galatasaray. You know, it could have been so Celtic as well. So there are all those things. But in the end, if you go and start thinking about that, which almost goes back to the name of the book, which is Football and How to Survive It. See, if you think about things like that and you begin to get bitter about things like that, it can lead to really dark places. And I've known enough players in my time where, you know, for good reason, an understandable reason, they look at the money in the game and they are quite embittered by it. I wanted to make sure that I finished it without any bitterness. I think I managed, but it was a close shave.
And you talk about being on lots of committees and stuff, and you were chairman of the PFA. And
reluctantly, I think.
And you went off to Selhurst Park one evening to watch Palace play Manchester United. And Eric Cantona, of course, was in action. Yeah. I think we all kind of guessed what that evening was.
Oh, dear.
The infamous kung fu kick and all that. You have to say infamous before. I think it's trademarked now. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, I mean, it was quite difficult. You felt quite compromised, didn't you, because... Gordon Taylor, the head of the PFA, sort of doubled down on the players' side, but you felt it was a bit more nuanced than that.
Yeah, exactly. And people aren't stupid, and journalists aren't stupid. You know, if we're saying, well, he's not really at fault, well, there's 20 cameras out there and they can see him flying through the airway, studs going into the chest of them. You know, so you kind of hands up here, he might have made a wee bit of a mistake there. But it's explaining the position you find yourself in. Now, as a player, everybody knows, you know, you've nuanced things, what are right and what are wrong, should you dive and all that. I've been through that. But there's, you know, you're a chief executive or a chairman of a union, you're supposed to back your members. But when does it start getting a bit stupid? You know, so I was trying to explain all this thing within the book of what it's like. And I kind of liked, you know, writing about this stuff, that when I looked back and thinking, well, wait a minute, that's not really me, but you kind of have to do it but I don't want to compromise myself, and I'm going to be honest. And of course, that happens much, much more than the next job I have, this major job I have outside football. But I think it was good to kind of get these things across to people that might be vaguely interested what it was like, you know, in the union at the time, or in a club, or at the upper echelons of a club, or in these committee meetings sometimes, of how they actually sometimes work. And that's, again, it's a kind of pretty wide ranging book. I mean, somebody said to me, it's not Chelsea and Everton anymore, you know, and, you know, I don't know what happened to you after that. Well, I can promise you quite a lot of weird things happened after that.
Yeah, we'll come up on to some of those. You talk about the, I mean, as a winger, obviously you took a bit of stick, and at that period, you know, wingers were fair game for tackles. Oh, yes. I remember when you interviewed Stuart Pearce, you said he was always very fair, Stuart. He'd give you a reducer, as Martin Keown would say, who was in earlier and sends his regards, by the way. But Stuart, you said, like, he'd take you out, but it was a clean tackle, it was a hard tackle, and he'd never talk to you. There was no verbals. But you also talk in the book about the worst tackle you ever encountered, which was Kevin Ball.
Yeah.
You were lucky you weren't injured, weren't you?
Yeah, it's a weird thing, because, I mean, it was a bit more openly violent back then. I think we'd kind of... People often say, was it better? Was it worse? Was it, you know, faster? Was it slower? Was it this? Was it that? And of course, it's all variances of it. You know, certain things that people think are brand new have been around forever. You know, false nines. Yeah, I played as a false nine. And also, I played in a team where we had false nines. We won the Euro Youth Championships. That's not yesterday. So these things have always happened. But there's certainly the time the ball tackle was hilarious, because I'd had a lot of bad ones, a couple of really bad ones. Dropped down division, refereeing a wee bit looser, and Kevin Ball came in and he tackled me roughly about the sternum, right, chest-ish.
Wow.
And he's running towards me, and I'm running towards him, and I flick the ball by him, and I've seen it coming at the last second. I've dived upwards. He's caught me and he's flipped me, and I've somersaulted over him, and I turned around to shout at him. And as I turned around to shout at him, he just kept on running all the way up the tunnel. Didn't even wait for the red car.
Do
you know, the weird thing is, I did a radio show with him years later, and he was in a studio in Newcastle, and I was down in Salford or something. And we chatted, and we talked about the games we were talking about, and then we went to a break, the news or something. And I said, Kevin, do you remember that tackle? And he went, oh, no, don't mention it. He was really, really embarrassed by it. But you cannot hold, you're being bittered by this. It was just the game. But Pearcey was a brilliant, I'm really happy you mentioned Stuart, because him and I had a fantastic set of battles over a 15, 16 year period.
Yeah.
And again, there is a lovely moment in the book where it was around the time of those Goal magazines, maybe just after it. And he came up to play in an under-21s game. And we both of us were well into our 30s, mid to late 30s by that point in time. And we finally had the chat.
Yeah.
And we'd never really chatted that much before it, because you're just psyching each other out.
Mm.
So even though I knew his punk music and my stuff, interest in the music scene as well, we probably got on great.
Mm.
We'd never spoken a word. Mm. But we got on great now.
Yeah, he's a good man.
It's strange, isn't it?
Talking of music, I mean, every chapter has a musical title.
Have you done a playlist, Pat? It's a pretty, you would make it a pretty decent Spotify playlist. Every chapter title is a song.
As it was in the last book.
Yeah.
I couldn't not do that, because, I mean, I DJed, I've always DJed, so, excuse me. And I was actually DJing in Dalston 2 weeks ago. So I still do it, still have the love of the music and the passion for it as well. And it's for a number of reasons, all the names fit really well for the chapters, if you look at them. But also, most of them are some of my favourite tracks and some of my favourite bands. So I met somebody just a couple of days ago who said, I'm definitely reading your next book, this one that's coming out now. And I said, well, did you like the last one? He goes, yeah, I liked it. But more so, I found more bands that I hadn't heard of before. So he's a big fan of a band called Jurutti Column now, because that was one of the kind of band names. But there's a lot of newer band names in there as well.
Pat Nevin is with us. We're going to keep chatting. We're going to talk about his time up to Scotland, where life got a whole lot more complicated, and he wasn't just a player anymore, but a player CEO, that kind of classic combo you have with quite a lot of players. And the book is called Football and How to Survive It, and so we'll keep chatting in a moment.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra.
and UnitedHealthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
Pat Nevin's with us. We're chatting about his book, Football and How to Survive It. Post-Tranmere, Pat went up to Scotland, spent some time at Kilmarnock, and then went via a friend and a contact, asked him to go to Motherwell and not just be a player. I wanted to be a player, and we effectively wanted you to be on the board, but you weren't allowed to be, were you, as a player, some sort of strange espionage edict?
Arcane rule.
Yeah.
He'd actually tried to buy a club before, a long time before. He tried to buy Celtic, the aforementioned Celtic, and he'd say to me that I fancy running that with him.
Wow.
And I was like, I'm 25, mate. Yeah. Give it a break. Don't be mad. He never got to buy Celtic, but he did then buy Motherwell many years later. And then, but at that point, after a long involved story, I agreed to go and run, help him run the club, oversee the club. And it was an extraordinary time. And I don't know if, I was going to say, I don't know if it's any more extraordinary than any club, but I think it probably was, the things that we went through in that four-year period. I mean, I was chatting to a good friend of mine, actually just before the show today, and he goes, what are the more extreme things that happened? I said, well, the goalkeeper being told he was going to be shot by the UDA and the IRA during one of the games was quite a hard thing to handle for me as chief exec.
This was Andy Gorham, wasn't
it? Yeah, the goalie. So that was kind of hard. We'd all sorts of weird traumas. And of course, it was a guy who'd come in. He didn't know anything really about football, but he bought a football club. So he owns a football club. And he's now wanting this football club to be run. And he asked me to help him, just advice, you know, first of all, but really is in the end run the entire thing. And, you know, that couldn't happen these days. Some people, but the thing is, it does happen a lot these days when people who don't know football end up owning clubs. Now, that's happened all the way through the Premier League when you think about it. So even though it's at a smaller level, it's at the top level of Scottish football, some of the same things will happen, you know, where there's not a knowledge of what their culture is. So there's kind of things in it where I wrote this book, you know, a while ago. I've been editing it for a wee while, long before some of these ownerships have changed. So this isn't an analogy that I've written just for the current moment, but it is extraordinary some of the things that people from the outside. But I suppose I sat back and thought about it and realised that it is the one industry where people come along and everybody thinks they know better than the manager. I mean, every single person in there, be they the owner, be they...
It can be quite costly, I found.
Yes, as a Chelsea fan, that's true.
But it's true, isn't it true? Every fan thinks they know the better
than
the professionals that are doing it. And it is just about the only major industry at the moment that everybody really strongly believes that. But in actual fact, yes, have an opinion. Yes, you will know a lot of things because we're very invested in it. But the other side is, it's now and again worth asking the people that have been in it for a wee while just to help you along and give you some warning points of the most obvious things that can go wrong.
You did have a Todd Bowley moment, didn't you? I mean, the owner went down and had a word with the players. You don't actually think that ever
It's a particularly good look.
I mean, well spotted, because I wrote this 2 years ago. This is long before the thing that we're told. Mm. Or any other owners, because others do it as well. And the difficulty is, because in actual fact, Roman Abramovich used to go in now and again as well. But in general terms, I mean, Ken Bates, back in the old days I was there, he'd come in now and again. I can just tell you, it's just the way it is. It's never taken well. Mm, whatever anyone says, you're in our business, you're in our space. You might own the club, but you're in our space. And that's something that if you're out with, you know, the actual culture of the sport, you don't really know it. And I always used to say to the owner back in those days, look, unless you're giving them money or a holiday, stay away. You know, just stay away.
It's good advice.
Other than that, but you know, sometimes it's their club. They own it. They can do what they like. But the amount of trouble that 99.9% of the time, it causes more problems than it fixes. And that's the. By the way, can I underline something? Whether it's right or wrong, sometimes you've got the right thing to say if you're an owner, and you should be able to say it to them. But it's never taken well.
No.
And that's the difficulty.
There's a great little line in the book where you talk about Billy Davis, who was the manager at Motherwell, and you were the CEO. Mm. And so effectively, he could drop you as a player, but you could sack him as the manager.
It's brilliant.
Right. So everyone's out there thinking, great, go through that one again.
Yeah.
Talk me through that one. So I'm his boss and he's my boss, right?
Yeah.
So it's a kind of weird one. Like, I was comfortable with it. And because of my type of personality, I'm not big on power.
Mm.
So I don't care. I'm just there to help the thing run along. Now, when I go there, I don't want to be manager. I can be manager if I want. I can. The owner said to me, "Be manager if you want." And I said, "Actually, I wouldn't be great at that." But we eventually get Billy in, and followed by Eric Black sometime later. But you know, I'm still playing. I'm still 34-ish.
Yeah.
You know, and so I'm saying, well, if you want me to still play, I'll play. You know, it's up to you. But I am the only person that can't batter your door and say, "I should be playing." Because I've chosen you and I've trusted your judgment, so I need to shut up. So, in actual fact, it looks like, and all the Scottish, you know, all the media were saying, you know, I'm pulling the strings and I'm the puppeteer. Mm. I'm the only guy that can't actually say a word to him. I'm the only guy that has to stand and basically get dropped. And I can sack him if I want a game like.
Yeah.
But that's not the point. The point being is you must give. Why buy a piano, you know, and you can't play piano, we've got a great piano player sitting there beside you. Don't try and play it yourself, get the good piano player.
Yeah. Right?
And it's that delegation, knowing when you should delegate, and that's what I was very comfortable doing.
I looked at a page in the book where you do your training, your rota for the day. It's just ludicrous. No one person could do what you were doing. It was affecting your family, and we'll come on to that in a minute. The book tells a story of how, unfortunately, the club ended up in administration, which is a fascinating story in itself about football and the way it runs. Mm-hmm. But we touched on your family there, and in the book, for the first time, you've talked about your son, Simon, and his autism. Mm-hmm. And it's something you've not talked about in all this time. Why now, Pat? Why did you want to talk about
it? Yeah, well, I mean, we found out when Simon was 2.5, really, that he was autistic. At the time, the people were ignorant, and that's not a pejorative word. People just didn't know about it. The word was not very well known in the lexicon. So I need to stop using words like lexicon. In the language, right? In the language, it wasn't really well known. And we were really struggling. But we made the decision then that it's not our dilemma. It's Simon's dilemma.
Mm.
He'll decide if he wants to be thrown into that maelstrom of being talked about and being out in the world and knowing about what your life is like. So we decided together. Now, we didn't hide it. Very, very specifically, we didn't hide it. It was just a private matter.
Mm.
And when Simon was ready, if he ever was going to be ready, because you can never know with the development of people who have got autism. So it's just really been the last couple of years that Simon's, you know, been able to talk, understand and relate to not being neurodiverse, you know. Mm. So when I talked to him about it, he said, yeah, that's fine. It's okay. I'm happy about it. It's, you know, and it's, that's all very well, but how much does he understand of, you know, what would happen if, you know, I talking to yourselves about it and someone posts something online towards him and some people can be nasty sometimes. So we need to be aware of that.
Sure.
But to be honest, I've got such belief in humanity.
Mm.
I mean, most people are really lovely and I could tell you a fabulous story about that. There was, you know, Simon had done something slightly wrong at a Hibs game, because eventually, you know, he has progressed so much. I'll tell you very quickly, it's a cracker. So he was at a Hibs game, a big Hibs fan. We're both big Hibbies now. I changed my team. I was Celtic, I'm now Hibs.
Wow.
And he's run on the pitch. I wasn't there. I was down doing a game in Liverpool. And he's got excited, and with his autism, you know, he's just a bunch of kids ran on, but they all ran off again. He's standing there. And it was a semi-final of a cup, the police have got a hold of him, and I've got a call on the way back up, which is, you know, Simon's been arrested. And it was really upsetting. Fortunately, my wee cousin happened to be at the game. Everybody knows everyone in Scotland, right? And he's told the policeman. The policeman's been good about it, just kicked him out. But I was doing the other semi-final for BBC Scotland TV the next day. And now think about that for a wee minute. They're going to show the highlights of the game the day before.
Yeah.
What about that young lad running on there? Well, terrible that. Oh, I can't believe these kids of today. You know, it's my son. Oh. But he didn't understand it. But the whole reason for doing it now, it's not get the violins. It's not we are victims, I'm of it. It's nothing got to do with that. And it's much more to do with, look, people progress. You know, people in all sorts of situations, you know, autism or other areas, and I won't say problems, who have got neurodiverse are different from us. And it's to say, look, we thought this, I thought this, this is the pain that we were feeling at the time. This is the things that happened, and all the positives and all the beauty. Some of the most perfect things, most beautiful things, and the best things that have happened in my life happened because of Simon and his autism, you know, and because of how he's developed through it and how he's different because of it. And I think some of that stuff that I'm writing about is quite joyous in a way. Now, it doesn't happen with everyone that way, and I know there are difficulties, and, you know, Simon has progressed really quite well. As I say, he'll always be with us. It's hard to be independent with the abilities that he's got.
Mm.
But anyone who's touched by autism and, you know, and similar problems at areas, they know, they understand this.
Mm.
So there's no hiding of it. It's nice to be able to talk about it. And if it's at all in any way helpful for anyone to see where I started and where we started, Annabelle and I, into where we are just now and what we've gone through, if that helps anyone at all, you know, hopefully this book's been worth it.
Excellent. Just want to ask you one more question before you go. It has to be quite quick because I'm going to talk to a Celtic fan, comedian Susie McCabe, in a minute. But you kind of drop your head on the desk when Benty said Ange Postecoglou likely to go to Spurs. I mean, briefly, how do you think he will fare in the Premier League? Do you think it is transferable? Do you have doubts or not?
Well, you are very annoying because you nailed it with your answer. You did. You nailed it. Yeah, he's exceptional. See, for Premier League football and styles, you look at Brighton, Brighton do, you look at what City do. You know, Ange is perfect. Ange is great. Ange will get these people playing at that high tempo, that fantastic, positive. You will love his football. But it's Spurs.
Yeah.
And you need to be allowed to do it. I mean, Antonio Conte is a great manager. And look what happened. You know, Mourinho, for all his faults, and he's got a few, is a very, very good manager. And whether he got him at the right time at Spurs or not, I don't know. But you need to be able to let Ange do his thing.
Yeah.
And if you let Ange do his thing and give him the time to do his thing, I think he's... I explain to people that Ange Postecoglou is a Celtic way. Like, it's the old phrase was at Celtic when I was there as a kid, was score an early goal and press on regardless, i.e. we go for it. Now, you know the Spurs way. It's a stylish way. It's a good football way. I go back to watching Glenn and, you know, Ozzy and all that sort of stuff. You probably know this story. I was standing on the shelf when I was Chelsea Player of the Year.
Yes.
Weird, another weird story. But
yeah.
If you give Ange, you know, the space and the time, Ange will be a joy, honestly. I don't know if he'll be massively successful and get you top four, but you'll like it again if you let him
do it. It's the opposite to Conte and Mourinho.
Yeah,
absolutely, 100%, yeah. 100%.
Pat, lovely to see you. We wish you well with the book. Continued success. Pat Nevin, Football and How to Survive It, is available now, and it's out in hardback. And Pat, remind me of the publisher.
It's also an Audible as well. So actually, I read it. And for anybody particularly down south, I do read it with my sensible voice on. So don't worry, you can understand it. All right, before I get this stick online, you can understand it. But it's Monterey,
octopusbooks.co.uk. But you'll find it in all good bookshops, Amazon, etc., and the Audible book as well. Thank you, Pat. Cheers.
Pleasure.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
We've been asking you today about singing the songs back to the stars that originally sang them. We saw the City players had a chance meeting with Elton John and gave him a bit of your song at the airport, which he seemed to quite like. David Essex, it seems, in a restaurant wasn't quite as keen when one of the listeners gave him the full Hold Me Close. At one point in my chauffeur job, I drove the Pet Shop Boys. I wanted them to break into song in the back of the car.
Why would they do that?
Go West, as that was the direction we were travelling in.
That's ridiculous.
I don't know if they did, Ray, but he said he definitely would have joined in. Talksport.com, text 81089, tweet TSH&J. And not getting your just rewards. Some of the City players, including De Bruyne and Gundogan, didn't get their Cup Winners' medals till today because they ran out of them. In the royal box when they were being handed out.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast. The Talk Sport Clips of the Week.
Well, not really. They'll be back on Friday, a fresh batch, but these were Clips of the Week in August 2005. They are Clips Pewter, so we can't promise you gold, but there might be something quite decent in there. Our producer collates them. He gets these old box of mini discs. He found some old clips and he digitises them, and here they are. We've not heard them since 2005.
I remember the first. This is definitely one of mine, first one.
Don't blame us. So what are we going to kick off with?
It's Alan Brazil, unsurprisingly.
Yeah.
Good morning. Coming up to 7 o'clock in the next hour, Mike Bovo live from the Yeovil.
Mike Bovo from Yeovil.
Yeah. Is he at Yeovil? You figure it, Mike Bovo at Yeovil at the Yeovil. And sticking with Alan, here he is with his plan for the day.
My itinerary this morning, I went to bed last night, was up at 4:30.
Yes.
Shower.
Yes.
Radio.
Yes.
Back for a quick nap. Party train, Lingfield.
Yes.
Enjoy the afternoon's racing. Home. Ruby Murray, bed, baton, bingo. What a great Wednesday.
Yeah. Or great every day, basically.
Yeah, like the great Tuesday and Thursday, no doubt, but bed by 10, chinny wreck on now.
Yeah.
It was probably one of those the following day. My throat. Mark. Yeah, anyway, what's next?
Let's get the sports news now.
Newcastle are talking with the Spanish club Deportivo La Coruña about striker Albert Lecu.
Albert Lecue, this always makes you feel special. Our Spanish football correspondent there. Over to the callers now.
Go to the phone lines. Let's speak to Harry in Hampshire. Harry, good evening. Welcome to Talk Sports.
Gentlemen, good evening.
Very good evening to you. So
I'm very perplexed.
Okay.
Let me elucidate.
What are you taking, Harry? Let me hallucinate. And beautiful. Now, these clips came during the 2005 Ashes, and here was one very happy England fan calling drive with Paul Bring-Turner and Rodney Marsh.
Gordon's in Derbyshire, and ecstatic with a cricket, Gordon.
Oh, fantastic day on Saturday. Once he went out, he spat his mouth off, he got fined. Catches spat his mouth off, he got fined. Now, it doesn't happen in football, that, does it? That's my argument.
Yes, it does. It does happen in football. Sure, it does.
It does a bit, yeah.
It does a bit, yeah. It never happens in football, but it does
it
a bit.
It sounds familiar, that bloke, the caller.
People get fined. What's next?
It's Graham Beecroft now, and we're calling this one Stop Saying Football Club.
I'm not convinced that you can make Liverpool successful, and that's why he left the football club and wanted to go to somewhere where he thought was going to get success. Steven Gerrard, by the way, who is still at Liverpool Football Club, things turned around and he stayed at the football club. Michael Owen, although he didn't say I've made a mistake, wanted to come back to the football club, and somebody who wants to pay for your football club should be signed by that football club. If I'm going to play for a football club and Michael Owen's in the front line, do I go and play for the football club?
Stop saying football club, Beaky.
It's true, really.
For goodness sake. And the bad news was, it was spreading to the callers.
Cisse, I believe, has got it in his locker to do something for Liverpool Football Club.
Don't you start, mate.
No, it's
Don't
great,
you
isn't it?
Start.
But it's okay. I'm sure it's just Liverpool where Beaky, for some reason, has to say football club.
I've got it right, very, very close to being right on two occasions, and only the last-minute intervention on each occasion, well, first of all, by Liverpool Football Club, and secondly, by Newcastle United Football Club.
Oh, don't start on Newcastle as well. This is the caller to Adrian Durham, and who could forget Alvin Martin now?
08704 2020. Chris in the New Forest. Chris, good evening, you're on TalkSport.
Good evening, Adrian. Good evening, Adrian.
Hello.
good bit of bluffing
just
there.
Just 40-odd caps for England, West Ham legend, mate. Yes, great. Just go. Maybe he was having a medical while he was making the call.
Probably. Yeah. It was, of course, the unforgettable Alvin Martin with Adrian, and the two of them got into a bit of a ding-dong.
European champions, you've said it, that's what they are. Now, are you putting that down to just Steven Gerrard on his own, or are you putting it down to something? Steven Gerrard...
Wouldn't have won it without him.
Mate, hold on a minute. Steven Gerrard was quoted as saying... Did I just call you? Did I just call you my wife's name there? Because you know what it is. When I'm in an argument, that's what I do.
Adrian gets under your skin like that, doesn't he? Really, yeah. Called him by his wife's name. What's next, Andy?
Here's the ultimate company man, Alan Brazil.
I do like Ken Bruce. I have to say, I'm a big Ken Bruce fan.
Yeah, cheers, Al.
Was he on during our slot at that time? Probably.
No, he did another one once. He says, in the afternoon when I'm driving home, about 1 o'clock, I do like a bit of classic FM. Yeah, cheers, Al.
Yeah,
so he goes from Ken Bruce on the classic FM.
Yeah, well, fair enough.
Mr. Talksport there. And finally, sticking with breakfast, it's Alan and Beaky taking a call.
Right, let's go to Weymouth and Paul. Hiya, Paul. Morning.
Good morning, lads. How are you doing?
Good, thank you.
Good, thank you.
Basically, yeah.
So,
Arsenal
carry on,
fan.
Paul.
Are you still there? Still there? Hello?
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Mambo 1089 and 1053.
Things have improved a bit since then.
Because he was talking. Yeah. He only stopped because you said to him, carry on.
No, I just think they obviously couldn't hear him in the studio, could they? Yeah, a little technical hitch. So there we are. They weren't bad, were they?
They were fun.
A bit of pewter, a few nice ones in there. We'll dust off a few more, all being well for you, next Monday. And the clips of the week, as usual, we'll be back on Friday. As always, we should let you know, if you do hear a clip on TalkSport over the next 7 days, please do send it, or the next 5 days, please do send it in to us. Add them into the mix. Anything that makes you laugh, you think could make the cut, then TalkSport.com/HNJ. Text to 81089. Tweet to TSHNJ, TSHANDJ. As always, all we need is a day and a time when you heard the clip go out, and we'll listen back. And if it's played, you will get a credit, as we said, Friday afternoon at 3:30. As always.
Now, talking of that clip of Beaky there about football club, this morning's court circular did something pretty similar, really. It said, the Prince of Wales, president of the Football Association, this afternoon attended the cup final between Manchester City Football Club and Manchester United Football Club. Well, yes, we get the idea. They're not plumbers. Yeah. That's a real Clive Murray, that one.
Well, it'd be the Beaky writer, I think.
He might have
done,
yeah. That's his job now.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
Thanks for all your emails, texts and tweets. With some of the City players having to wait to get their medals, including two-goal hero Ilkay Gundogan. Didn't get his until today, apparently, because they ran out of them. How did that happen?
I don't know.
Have a few spares.
Ridiculous.
You would think that would make more sense. Mm. Not getting your rewards. Danny says, when I was in the army, after a four-month tour of Iraq, we came home to complete decompression and our medal parades. There was a mess up and some didn't arrive. We had to do the parade anyway and got our medals through the internal mail 3 months later.
Oh, yeah,
just plonked on the side of an envelope.
Brilliant.
It's terrible, isn't it? It's not quite the same, Danny. It's a bit like being given your medal after someone else had been a drugs cheat.
Yeah, yeah.
It must be terrible, mustn't it? I mean, I know these days they do actually put on proper...
They try and invite you to the proper
ceremony. That's right. Yeah. At least it's in front of a crowd. But that was... Wasn't it Kelly Sutherton who said it was kind of turned up in an envelope? That's terrible. It's not the way it should happen. Anyway, yes, not getting your just rewards and why off the back of the City players waiting. And singing a song back to the original vocalist. We'd love to know if you've spotted a music star and thought... What they really want me to do at the moment is go up and sing one of their songs to them in their face.
They don't.
they'll really enjoy that. Yeah.
And the papers, once again this morning, was the Daily Star. I love a bit of weather. And it's like it's a competition. So last week it was hotter than Benidorm.
Yeah.
So fine, fair enough, it wasn't. And this week it's hotter than Ibiza. I thought, yeah, that's why I'm wearing three layers, including a sweater. Because it's hotter than Ibiza. Thanks.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
Well, there we are. That's how it unfolded today. I'm here with Charlie tomorrow. Tony Woodcock's going to be with us. John Lloyd from the World of Tennis is popping in. Amongst other things, we'll have a celebrity combination lock. So do hope you can join us from 1. If not, the podcast will be available around 4.
You've been listening to the Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast. Hear the guys every weekday between 1 and 4 p.m. on TalkSport.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50. Luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedy-ad-free. That's amazon.com/comedy-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.